The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
We are witnessing the birth of a new country, but nobody is looking. In an act that has been a century in the making, the Kurds in northern Iraq voted yesterday to separate and gain their independence. This is going to be huge. The fallout from the post-World War I Sykes-Picot Agreement continues. If you don't know what that is, go to glennbeck.com and we will help explain it to you. It's why ISIS exists. It's why a lot of these troubles exist. Is because of what the West did and England did in World War I. Stage one was ISIS declaring their caliphate and dissolved the Syria-Iraq border. Stage two begins right now, and it is rare that you witness a true pivot point in history, but that is what is happening right now in the Middle East. And after the dust settles, the entire map of the Middle East will look different, but freedom is never free. The Prime Minister of Iraq is furious. He's given the Kurds until Friday to turn over all of their airports, all of their oil assets, the border crossings. And if the Kurds refuse, Iraq has promised to begin a travel and goods embargo. The United States is going to abandon the Kurds yet again. Iraqi troops and Iranian-trained Shia militias are moving to the Kurdistan-Iraqi border. Turkey is also moving tanks and troops to their border with the Kurds and threatening their own embargo. Iran has shut down all air travel. The entire area is set to ignite. Something else that hasn't been reported is the small religious minority currently caught in between the Iranian and the Iraqi forces moving north and their Kurds holding their ground. The region of Nineveh will be one of the biggest battlegrounds. This is important. A lot of the work that Mercury One has done, freeing Christians, saving Christians, is in one of the oldest Christian lands in the world. And once again, the Christians living there are facing annihilation. They just came back home. We are witnessing the birth of a new country and change on a massive scale. But change of this magnitude comes at a price. And as usual in this area, I fear the Christians may end up paying the highest price.
It's Wednesday, September 27th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Wow, we have a fantastic program lined up for you today, but we can't start until we deal with Stu's white privilege.
We did find a San Diego State University professor, sociology professor, who had a white privilege checklist. Is that what I'm dealing with?
Yes. Here we have the ways where you can have white privilege, Stu, because you are
white.
Yes. Okay. So I need you to check the places here or just say yes to the places where that privilege applies to you or where you have encountered this kind of white privilege. Okay.
Okay.
And at the end, I'm going to ask you to try to list at least two more ways that you have privilege based on your race.
Wait, so you're saying that I'm going to say yes to a lot of these because you're already indicating there are two more ways.
There's 20 of them. They're all yeses.
Oh, this is a really bad quiz, but okay.
Well, okay. All right. You ready? Mm-hmm. I can arrange to be in the company of people of my race most of the time. Yes or no? Answer. Answer.
Well,
answer.
I would say yes, but that's also applicable to anyone who's in a community that happens to have people around. For example, if you were to live in Little Havana, you could probably find a lot of Cubans. If you happen to be in Little Italy, probably find a lot of Italians. If you happen to be in, you know, let's say Philadelphia, where the percentage of African Americans is high, you could probably answer yes to that as well. I don't think that makes you privileged.
So I'm going to mark this as a yes, but.
Well,
No, I didn't.
And is it? I just want to make sure I understand, because I'm told that diversity is a positive.
Mm-hmm.
So why would it be a privilege to be surrounded only by your own race?
Because you don't have to put up with the oppression of being different. That's why, Stu.
I look at being with different groups of people as a positive. Mm-hmm. Being around mm-hmm. someone who's like me, mm-hmm. it really doesn't mm-hmm. matter, because it's yeah. you're basing them on the, you know, maybe the content of their character, maybe instead of the color of their skin. I'm just coming up with that one off the fly, so I don't know if it makes sense in a wider perspective.
I'll just leave it at yes, but okay. Stu, there's 20 of these.
Okay,
I can't take many more of your excuses. Mm-hmm. I can go shopping alone most of the time, pretty well assured that I'm not going to be followed or harassed. Answer the question, Stu.
I can do that, yes, proudly. Okay. I also believe most other people can, regardless of their race. In fact, I've been around many people. This is going to surprise a lot of people. I've been around African Americans while they're shopping. A lot of times it seems to be fine. I guess I'm missing out on the evil eye in the sky.
I will tell you that I do talk to African Americans, you know, and I visit jails.
Oh, okay.
Or things like that.
This is how you're supposed to believe as a conservative.
Right. As a conservative, okay. That's how mm-hmm. you're supposed to. I visit them when, you know, when they're in jail.
Right. Okay.
But I have African-American friends who say that they actually are followed in stores, that they are, and depending on the store, they are followed. But I will tell you this, depending on the store, I'm followed.
Well, you're followed for other reasons.
Yeah.
Like, I can't wait till he gets outside and I can run him over with the car type of reasons.
I can turn on the television or open to the front page of the paper and see people of my race widely represented.
I mean, we're in a country that's 72% white, 74% mm-hmm. white.
So privileged. That would privileged.
That's not privileged. I don't feel good
it
about that.
It is privileged.
Because I can understand. You could say,
you don't ever have to feel like an outcast.
Feel like you're saying, I can understand. You say, you walk into a room and
this
everyone
is a safe zone for me right now. I just want everybody to know I feel very unsafe. Being around this bigotry, I feel very, very unsafe. I feel unsafe.
I'm bringing that to the table. But if you walk into a room and everyone else
raped right now,
no, you're not.
I feel like I'm being raped.
That's
right
really
now by him.
Icky. So if you walk into a room and everyone else is the opposite race, mm-hmm. you could say, in theory, right, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that you may feel judged, right? You may feel like you're alone, okay? I don't know why, because if you see people as people, you wouldn't feel that way. But let's say you feel that way. I can kind of get my arms around that one.
I can totally get my arms. I can sincerely get my arms around that. If you've never walked into a room, because I have, and I'm not talking about race. I've walked into a room full, I just did it last weekend, a room full of liberals.
Yeah.
And I felt very uncomfortable.
Yeah, but you're being singled out because of who you are as an individual. And I think here they're talking about who you are as a group. Like I don't walk into places and say, "Oh my God, I'm the only white person here," and feel weird about that. I mean, you might notice it because it's a cultural difference, but I don't feel bad about it. And I would hope that's the same case with African Americans. In fact, it's much more common with African Americans because they live in a country, if they live in America, where it's 76% white. So statistically, this would happen much more often.
There's a yes, but.
No, wait, hold on. Wait, there's more to that one. What was the question again?
I can turn on the television and the front page of the paper and see the people of my race widely represented.
And that's what I was getting to, is that like you go into a room, at least you could theoretically feel oppression. How are you being oppressed by the front page of a newspaper? Well, who cares? The people could be being arrested on the front page and they're white. I mean, why would that make you?
Wow. Do you see it? Do you see what's happening, America?
This is how this is going to go, huh? I want to make sure I understand.
I'm seeing it. I'm hearing it. It's disturbing. Hmm. I'm told about our national heritage or about civilization, but I'm shown people of my color, that I'm shown the people of my color made it what it is.
Well, I happen to listen to the Glenn Beck program where they teach me about the Black Founders quite often.
Yeah,
so I
have to tell you that one, I can't even see that one because I've not been told that it's just a group of white people that have made it. I mean, I hate to be old fashioned, but I see people as people. I can be sure that my children will be given curricular materials that testify to the existence of their race.
Testify to the existence of their. I don't. I mean, that's...
I can be sure that my children will be given the materials that testify to the existence of their race.
So is there a African-American denialist society that is like flat earthers?
I've never met the people who deny that others exist except white people.
Yeah, that's a weird one. And what is it called?
I mean, even the worst racists, the reason why they're racist is because they're trying to kill everybody else.
Right, at least they are acknowledging.
They're acknowledging that they're other races.
And what is that, in a test or what was it?
I don't even know.
Curricular
materials that testify to the existence of their race.
It's interesting. When I took the SAT, back in high school, I didn't do much studying, but I did do here's how you take the SAT test reading period, which I read a couple books on it. And one of the things I remember from it was there was a controversy about how these test materials did not properly address the African-American communities. And so this is before I took the test. So in response to that controversy, they added questions about African Americans to the SAT, which is, of course, a kind of a silly response, right?
Kind of sounds like a racist response.
It kind of does.
I'm going to change the test for a race.
Question one, question two, question black three.
It's crazy,
right? So,
remind me, I have a dream today. But I'll get to that later.
It's something else. It's about getting test questions for African Americans.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. It's racist to believe that one race of people are not people.
Right. They have bad people and good people.
Mm-hmm. They're people. And it's racist to think that African Americans can't handle bad people of their own race.
Yeah.
I can go to a music shop and count on finding the music of my race represented.
Who goes to music shops anymore? The music shop is iTunes, and there's plenty of people represented
in it. There's lots of music shops. There's lots of music shops. You just don't want to admit to them because of your white privilege. There's tons of music shops. You look it up. Google music shops. Music shop.
I bet I could.
Okay. You Google your town and music shop, and you are going to find a ton of them. If you live in a white area.
I will say, too, black people have a lot of legitimate things to complain about.
The fact music is not one
of
them.
They're very well represented.
Let's see. I can go to the supermarket and find the food I grew up with.
Well, yeah, I mean,
there's
a lot of weird stuff like avocado and mangoes that I didn't know existed back in the day.
Right, I didn't grow up with a lot of that stuff.
Chia seed.
If it's like, you know, pig's feet, there's a lot of, you know, Southerners that are eating pig's feet and weird stuff that, no, you don't necessarily have that in Wisconsin.
Right, there's regional things that happen. But, I mean, the same thing you could say, again, you go to Chinatown in New York City, you're seeing all sorts of weird things you didn't know you could eat.
Can you get a deep dish pizza in Seattle like you can in Chicago? No, you're going to have to search for it.
Yeah, it's not the authentic, right? Yeah.
That's normal. That's normal. Regional stuff. Yeah. That's regional stuff.
And it's white privilege stuff, as we're learning.
Well, of course. I can go into a hairdresser's shop and somebody who can deal with my hair. Oh, I wish. I could walk into any shop, even a music shop, and have somebody say, I can deal with that hair. Nobody can deal with
no.
it.
No. That's sad.
Whether I use checks, credit cards, or cash, I can count on my skin color not to work against the appearance of financial responsibility. I think there is something to be said for that. I think that there probably are people that look at black people or, you know, Hispanic or non-whites, but I think there are the same that will look at some white guy who's coming in with jeans and a Confederate flag T-shirt.
Of course.
And, a girlfriend that, you know, is really classy and have the same thing. I am not made acutely aware that my shape, bearing, or body odor will be taken as a reflection on my race.
Wait, it's racist to smell body odor now? Really?
Do races smell differently? I've never noticed that.
I am not either. Some of the food smells differently. There's a large Indian population who lives here locally, and one of my relatives lives in an apartment building. And every Saturday or Sunday, they make curry from scratch. And it is a situation in which they notice that in their apartment, which just happens to be near the Curry apartment. There are things things about different cultures that can
I will say
be
this,
pungent.
Body odor will be taken as a reflection on my race. No, I would identify you as my 13-year-old son.
No, no. I don't think
I don't think that's
helpful
just saying
to his life.
143 Americans. That is the number that could be affected by the Equifax breach.
Oh, so it wasn't that bad at all. Only 143 Americans?
Only about half of us.
Well, I think you said 143. So I think what you meant may have been 143 million.
Right. Thank you.
So 143
Thank
would not
you.
Be a news
white
story.
White privilege. Look at him just muscling his way in with his white privilege.
What I do.
The hackers are now, they now have the information the identity thieves need to impersonate you. You have your name, social security number, birth date, address. This can be used to open credit card, take out loans. They could even apply for a mortgage in your name. And you're not going to know about it until it is way too late and they have destroyed your life. LifeLock uses proprietary technology that will help detect a wide range of identity theft. If there's a problem, a U.S.-based identity restoration specialist is going to work to fix it. Now, nobody can monitor all transactions at all businesses, and they can't, you know, prevent all identity theft. That's not possible. But LifeLock is there watching 24/7, and they alert you and then help clean it up. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code Beck. That's 10% off your LifeLock membership. Visit LifeLock.com, promo code Beck, and save 10% right now.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
I'm actually really excited about the guest we have in hour number two. He is... he is the John Stewart of Egypt. He was a heart surgeon and decided to, he went and he was working in Tahrir Square, just bandaging people up. And he realized, I've got to say something. Started a little show on YouTube. They expected maybe 3,000 to 5,000 views in the first week. It ended up getting, in the first day, I think 50,000 views. And it was in the millions by the end of the month. And so he started doing a TV show online. Now he is the biggest deal in Egypt. But he has been arrested, tried by three different presidents now over in Egypt. This guy is different than John Stewart. He's not popular with any side.
Now, you haven't been liked by three straight presidents either.
I know.
Congratulations.
I've been hated by three presidents too. So we have something in common.
You're actually but more he like is, five in a row.
Yeah, but he. Yeah, thank you. We don't need to rub it in. Okay. But it's fascinating to hear him. There's a new documentary out about him that you should see, and it's going to be this guy is one of the bravest people in the world, and you want to talk about doing something that has no manual? It's what he's doing. Real courage out of Egypt, and we're going to talk to him coming up in a few minutes. Also, David French is going to be joining us, and we have to spend some time on what is happening with the Kurds. If you have been helping with the Nazarene Fund, this is really important. We were going to announce something, I think it was last week, and we said we needed to wait for the Kurdish referendum to see how that was going to shake out. I'm not going to get into the full announcement and what we were planning on doing and what we are still planning on doing. But our sources told us we had about an 18-month window starting around Christmas time to be able to save slaves and what is happening with ISIS in the Middle East before the Middle East is completely, Iraq in particular, is in just in complete chaos, a failed state. So we were working on some pretty aggressive things for an 18-month time period. The way this is shaking out with the Kurds, the window may be closed. And that's why we've delayed announcing anything, because we may have to change everything we were thinking about doing. The windows may be closing, and the Christians are going to be caught right in the middle. And the Kurds are going to have the Iranians and the ISIS, Turkey, the communists over in the Syrian Kurds. You name it, the Kurds are going to come under attack. And these are really good people. And we have to discuss that today. But I would ask for your prayers for the Nazarene Fund. I would ask for your prayers for those Christians and those Kurds and those innocent Iraqis that are caught in the middle of this. The Middle East is about to dramatically change. This is as big as the Arab Spring. I could be wrong, but I think this is going to be as big as the Arab Spring, and not necessarily in a good way. David French coming up next.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So David French wrote an article. He's a senior writer at the National Review. And when I saw the headline, I had to find out how he got there. The headline was, I understand why they knelt. It was it's an amazing read. And he joins us to talk to joins us now to talk about that. And also Judge Moore's win last night.
So, David, welcome to the program. Let's start first with Judge Moore. If you have any thoughts on that at all, what does that tell you? What happened last night?
You know, it tells me that the populist wave that swept Trump in, and a populist wave that really is dominant in the South, is still dominant. I mean, a lot of people forget that Trump really catapulted in, it really began to lock down the nomination in Super Tuesday, which was a Southern dominated primary. And if there's one thing, if you follow the politics of the South, if you studied the politics of the South, populism has sold here for generations. So it doesn't surprise me at all.
I mean, it is populism in the South, why this is so controversial. And please, if you're listening in the South, instead of getting mad, let's have a discussion and talk about actual history. But populism in the South, really, with Reconstruction and even the Civil War, populists created this illusion that the Civil War was not about slavery. It was about states' rights, which is so clearly debunked if you just read the Confederate Constitution. I mean, it's, you don't have to have any conversation on it at all. But populism has swept the South up into this glory days of this was about something different than slavery. And it continues through today. So I'm reading a few people, David, that say that Judge Moore is actually a great constitutionalist and a great conservative.
He's not a great constitutionalist. I mean, this is a guy who, he's a populist folk hero is what he is because of his stance that he took regarding the Ten Commandments. And he's a person who will catapulted to fame by defying federal court orders that were lawful court orders that he disagreed with. And so he decided to defy them. Now, you know, look, that's all well and good when you love when you love his cause and you hate the order that he's defying. But, you know, I'm somebody who's been arguing on behalf of the constitutional rights of students and faculty members in college campuses. And we could pretty much bank on colleges not defying those court orders. I mean, if we have a world where you just defy the court orders you don't like, it's a lawless world. But it made him a folk hero. For a lot of folks, especially for, you know, the folks who dominate a primary electorate in the state of Alabama. And so it's nothing about this is surprising. This is exactly what you would expect. And I think the populist sort of wave has not abated at all down here. And I live in Tennessee. I just live about 40 miles north of Alabama. You can feel it. The populist wave has not abated at all. They still support Donald Trump, but to the extent that they're disappointed with Donald Trump, it's mainly when he departs from the populism of the campaign.
Why is this dangerous to the average person, David? They don't understand why the wrapping yourself in the flag and populism is a bad thing.
Well, you know, often it's not based so much on ideas as it's based on an attitude. It's based on an anger, and it's based on a rage, and it's based on frankly, a misunderstanding that this is the only way to win. This is the only way to defeat the left. And so what you have are politicians who are capitalizing on emotion. They're capitalizing on feeling, and they're not advocating particular ideas. And what begins to happen when that happens is you start to define yourself by your opposition to the other side, as opposed to what you're for. I mean, and you see this all the time. You see people who define whether or not something is good by the number, you know, the gallons of liberal tears being shed. And it becomes inherently divisive. It becomes devoid of ideas. And the odd thing is as populism increases, you'll actually have greater rage even with less ideological separation. I mean, think of the 2016 election. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton were two of the least ideological candidates in modern times. Hillary had been on every side of issue, every issue except abortion. Trump had been on every side of every issue, including abortion. And yet it was the most vicious race of our adult lifetimes. That's what happened.
So I was talking to Brad Meltzer, who's a great historian and writer, and we had a conversation yesterday, and I said, we have abandoned the Judeo-Christian heroes. We have abandoned Moses, who was not a warrior, and we've abandoned Jesus, who was not a warrior. And what I can't say that this is true for the entire West, because, you know, Europe still has enough of the fascist communist love in them that they like a strong man. But it's not the same as it is in the Middle East. And then when you went to Europe, it lessened. And we had Jesus and Moses. And when he came over here to America, we really believed for a long time, blessed is the peacemaker. Look for the humble person. Look for the quiet person. And you know, walk softly. We've abandoned all of that now. Haven't we lost the essence of who we are if we can't get back to a point to say, you know, the reasonable person, the quiet person, the peacemaker is the hero, not the one that punches people in the face?
Well, I mean, I think we're really on the knife's edge here, in the sense that if we don't turn back from this notion that character no longer matters in a president, for example, or turn back from the notion that the ends justify the means, or to use a popular phrase from the left, by any means necessary, you know, the polarization that we experience now is only the beginning. You know, and one of the more discouraging things that I've seen, again, you know, I live in rural Tennessee here in the South. It's a very evangelical area. And the number of my fellow evangelicals who profess to believe that character matters in politicians has plummeted. Plummeted. They don't even seek it anymore. They don't seek character. And character is destiny in so many ways, as my colleague Jonah Goldberg is fond of saying. It's and when you have low character, you're going to the results that are achieved, the long-term cultural damage, all of those things are going, it's going to come back to bite you, the extent to which you wrap your arms around people of low character. And that is a problem that we're confronting in this country. And look, it's on both sides. I mean, as the 2016 election demonstrates. So, you know, I think you're right. I mean, we need to embrace people of high character.
So you wrote an article for National Review. I understand why they knelt. And I can't believe your day was pleasant after posting this. But you brought out something really, really good. You said, look, you know, everybody on the NFL that is cheering for free speech, they're all too happy to sic the government on a tiny few bakers or florists who don't want to use their artistic talents to celebrate events they find offensive. How many progressives who celebrated First Amendment on Sunday sympathize with the college students who chant speech is violence and try to seek to block conservatives from college campuses? But then you went on to say, but as a conservative, I see many conservatives decry Google's termination of a young dissenting software engineer working overtime yesterday to argue that Trump is somehow in the right. Yet Google is a private corporation and Trump is the most powerful government official in the land. The First Amendment applies to Trump. The First Amendment applies to Trump, not Google. And his demands for reprisals are ultimately far more ominous.
Right.
Would you care to explain yourself, Mr. French?
Well, you know, let's back up a minute. I mean, what we're talking about is a protest that was petering out. I mean, Colin Kaepernick was out of the league. There are a few people here and there who are kneeling. And then Donald Trump went, and he didn't say, I disagree with them. He said, they should be fired. He called them names. He said, they should be fired. Then in tweets, he didn't just go after, for example, these football players. He went after Steph Curry because of Steph Curry's reluctance to go to the White House. And then he even said, if people don't do what I say, which is stand, there should be economic boycotts and reprisals against the NFL. Now, this is the most powerful man in the world. And I want you to put on your thinking cap for the audience and say, what happened if Barack Obama said, if Tim Tebow injects religion into the football field anymore and he kneels after a touchdown anymore, he should be fired, that expletive. He should be fired. And then if he's not fired, we should boycott the NFL. You can't tell me that the entire conservative world wouldn't absolutely melt down at that. And so what happened was you had the most powerful person in the world trying to dictate to these individuals how they should express themselves. And look, what happened last Sunday wasn't them. It wasn't the Colin Kaepernick Black Lives Matter protest. That wasn't what happened on Saturday. What happened on Saturday was people saying to the president, you don't dictate how we speak. So I absolutely understand that impulse, just as I would understand it if a whole bunch of players knelt with Tim Tebow to protest if Barack Obama did something like this. And it's always very helpful to put on our thinking caps and say, what if the other side had done something similar towards somebody we perhaps liked? Then it begins to clarify these issues. My position, though, is we need to stop being so outraged about speech we disagree with. Our position should be to rebut bad speech with better speech. I didn't like Colin Kaepernick's protest, and I wrote that, and I tried to persuade people that his protest was not right.
They will say, though, that you can't persuade these people, and somebody's got to strike back. That's what I hear all the time.
Well, I know. I hear that all the time, too, Glenn. This fight fire with fire, got to punch it back. Now, let's see how well that works, okay? So we had, 10, 12 NFL players the Sunday before kneeling? So he punched back really hard, and what did we have? 200-plus kneeling. You know, this fight fire with fire, often what it ends up doing is it makes you feel good because you're really, really mad, but it doesn't accomplish what you want. What it actually accomplishes is more division. What it actually accomplishes is more rage. And what it actually accomplished was mainstreaming kneeling for the national anthem and for the flag. That's what he actually accomplished. And I'm saying, let's turn down the temperature and let's respect free speech and let's not freak out when somebody disagrees with us. Let's have a consistent view that says the United States of America is a place where people have the right to be wrong. And I'm going to try to persuade them when they're wrong. But even if they stay wrong, I'm going to tolerate that. And I'm going to be okay with the fact that there are going to be people who are wrong in this society. We'll never create a utopia. So we got to learn how to live together when we don't agree with each other. And it's not by saying, I want to fire people who disagree with me and I want to fire people who offend me. That's the wrong way to do it.
David, thank you for making members of the audience uncomfortable today with your speech. Thank you very much.
It's one of the things I really like about David French and his writing is there are times I'll go into an article and not know what to expect, and it'll challenge what I'm thinking. And I don't know. I like that. I think that's what we're supposed
healthy.
To do.
Yeah, it's what, really healthy.
He's the senior writer at the National Review. He wrote the book Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore. He's an Iraq veteran. And the article is, I understand why they knelt. We'll tweet it from at Glenn Beck and at World of Stew.
When it comes to your mortgage, buying or refinancing, you need people that take away the stress and not just your money. We need people that take away your stress and not add more stress in your life. That's why American Financing does so well. They have salary-based mortgage consultants at American Financing that are dedicated to helping you make a smart mortgage decision that align with your unique financial goals. With American Financing, you get straightforward and effortless mortgage experiences. Stu will tell you, he went in, they said, what are your goals? He told them, they said, I'm not sure we can meet all those because I think some of those might be a little crazy.
I don't want to pay for the home. Is that possible?
Yeah, and they said, we don't know if we can hit those, but if you can find somebody that will hit those. And he went through, I don't know how many different companies. It came down to American Financing. And then at the last minute, some other company came in and said, we'll do that. And they were like, well, if they're crazy enough to do that, go. This is the kind of partner that you have.
Yeah, they could have had my business very easily by just telling me.
Right.
And they actually sent me another place.
because that's not what they do. No. And they don't, you know, they didn't think that was necessarily healthy. You know, good luck with that, Stu. American Financing is also now doing reverse mortgages, a good way to increase your monthly cash flow with no mortgage payment while you're still retaining the ownership of your home. But that's not right for everybody. Make sure you ask them for all of the details on that. Call 1-800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440. Or you can go online at AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So glad that you're here and joining us today. Thank you so much. Let me go to Brett in Alabama. Hello, Brett. You're on the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, Glenn, how are you? It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you very much. What happened yesterday in Alabama from your point on the ground?
Well, from my point of view, Luther Strange, he didn't lose. It had nothing to do with Donald Trump. He lost because of the sleazy way he got into office in the first place. He was at the time investigating what we refer to as our love gov, Governor Bentley. And all of a sudden, the investigation dropped for a short time, just long enough for Luther Strange to be appointed to the Senate seat. And that
wow.
just did not sit right with me and doesn't sit right with a whole lot of people I know. So
I have to tell you,
my personal opinion, I think that's why.
I will tell you that all politics are local. And this is the kind of stuff that I think the national media always misses, and especially when they have an agenda. When you want to be for or against Trump, you miss things like that. And if that indeed, I don't know because I don't live there, but if that indeed was what was going on and the way people felt, that just puts him into the category of a Hillary Clinton in a way. And people are done with those special favors, backroom deals, that kind of a politician. It's why Hillary Clinton lost. You believe that it's why Strange lost as well.
I do, and I also believe that's one of the reasons our new governor, Kay Ivey, pushed for the special election. The original plan when Governor Bentley was still in was Luther Strange was just going to ride out the remainder of the term. But once we got rid of Governor Bentley and the new governor came in, she ordered the special election, and I believe that was the right thing to do.
Good. Thank you so much, Brett. I appreciate it. An amazing, amazing hour next. Don't miss it.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
So what matters most? Well, when you're a dialysis patient and you can't get dialysis, or you need oxygen but your tank is running out, generators without any diesel, no electricity, disabled people stuck in their home without a way to get any kind of food or supply or even help, that's what matters most. It certainly isn't an NFL football game or what somebody decides to do standing or sitting or kneeling at a football game. The reality of what matters most is happening right now in Puerto Rico. It has been a week since Hurricane Maria devastated the island and killed 10 people. Almost the entire island is still without electricity or cell phone service. Officials say it's going to take months to restore electricity. Assessing the damage is even difficult. Right now, there are few flights into the island, and emergency power efforts are focused on hospitals. And predictably, President Trump is tweeting. He's being criticized by politicians and celebrities now on the left for not focusing enough attention on Puerto Rico with his tweets. They hate when he tweets, but now he's not tweeting enough, apparently. This is a home of 3.4 million American citizens, but it doesn't matter if they're citizens or not. Last week, Trump declared Puerto Rico a disaster zone, making it eligible for federal aid. He sent FEMA, the FEMA head, Brock Long, Homeland Security Advisor Tom Bossert to the island, and 10,000 FEMA workers. 10,000. He also said there's some other problems on the island. He said that it is the island's broken infrastructure, ancient electrical grid, and the fact that Puerto Rico is an island.
That tends to complicate relief efforts just a bit. Now, President Trump has announced that he's going to visit Puerto Rico on October 3rd. Really? Why? They don't really need a state visit, Mr. President. They really don't. That only complicates things. Here's what the people of Puerto Rico do need. Congress needs to lift the Jones Act. Look this up. We'll explain it later. But basically what that says is all ships, all planes from anywhere in the world have to come to the United States first and then to Puerto Rico. That is ridiculous to have that in place, especially at this point. They need to lift it so boats and planes from all over the world and the United States can assist in the relief effort, and it can come directly to the citizens of Puerto Rico. That's what needs to be done. And we also have to remember that the government should not be the first resort. The government in America is our last resort. If only the NFL player protest had tried to raise awareness for something else, maybe all of us would get our priorities right and remember what matters most.
It's Wednesday, September 27th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
There is a guy. There's very few people that have come on this program that have that I've put into the category of a real hero, a global hero, somebody who is actually facing down giants and not popular with anyone except the people and has stared down true dictators and rewriting history and the book of how things are done. Living in Egypt, they don't do satire. They don't have the Daily Show. They don't have shows where you take on the president. You find yourself in a prison. The world is radically different in the Middle East. There's a guy who was a doctor. And during the Arab Spring, he went out to Tahrir Square and he just started aiding people, helping people. And what he saw was different than what he was seeing on television. He decided to do a YouTube television show with a friend, and it became an overnight success. Gigantic. Before you know it, he's now doing a television show where he's actually taking on the president of his country. And doing things that had never, ever been done before under a dictatorship. He has been hated by Mubarak. He was arrested by Morsi. And Al-Sisi doesn't like him all that much either. His name is Dr. Bassem Youssef, and he joins us now. They call him the John Stewart of Egypt. Welcome, Bassem. How are you?
Hello, Glenn. How are you? Such a pleasure to talk to you, man. I mean, I've known you forever. It's such a pleasure. How are you?
Thank you. I would imagine that you have strong opinions about me, and we can get to those if you care to later, but I would rather talk about you.
No. I enjoy all your views, and I have to say that, like, I have watched you, I don't know, like, I find your ways and I don't know. I respect all kind of freedom of speech, and I have no strong opinions about you at all. No.
Well, that's fine. So, Bassem, the one thing that we should come together on is I was really concerned about the Arab Spring because of the Muslim Brotherhood. And I really felt that as I said back at the time, Mubarak is a monster. And we've, as Americans, we helped create him. We have no business to tell anybody about freedom. We were in bed with Mubarak for a long time. Horrible person. And here we are with our ghost plane sending people in saying, we're not going to torture anybody. We'll just bring you to Mubarak. And I was concerned because I do know the history of the Middle East, not like you do. And I do know I take people who are Islamic extremists at their word. And I saw the Arab Spring as an opportunity for those who wanted to create caliphates. As it turns out, you guys dodged a bullet, and it was ISIS and, you know, forming the caliphate, and you guys got away from the Muslim Brotherhood. In watching your documentary, I can't imagine living it. Can you tell the American people what it is like to go through a revolution?
Yeah, it's very chaotic. I chose comedy and satire to go through it, which was very difficult because we had to write comedy where things were basically falling apart outside, especially threats. I mean, like, there were people, I was put under siege in my theater writing my show, and I was put under siege by people who are supporters by the military, not the Islamists. So the thing is, you are completely right about being scared of the Islamists, and it's totally justified. But what people miss is that the Islamism, radical Islamism, has been also a tool by military as much as it was a tool by Islamists.
I agree.
It was Sadat in 1980 who was actually gave a greater power to Sharia in the constitution in order to have unlimited times of re-election. It was the al-Haq in Pakistan who also pushed into the Sharia laws so he would appease the Islamists. It was Jafar Numeri in Sudan who changed the country into an Islamic state because military dictatorship was not working. And even now, right now, the military under Sisi is using all of the conservative values of Islamism. It's kind of like, our Islamism is better than their Islamism. And anybody, and they has put people in jail because they tried to reform some interpretation of the religion. So the thing is, I don't think that the Muslim Brotherhood were on their way to the caliphate. As a matter of fact, they were in bed with the military. The military actually pushed them to the front because the Muslim Brotherhood would give them guarantees so they will keep their own benefits. So it is basically a game. You know that the most radical people in Egypt are the Salafis, which is kind of like the right wing. It's kind of like Muslim Brotherhood on steroids. They were created by the Mubarak regime. Mm-hmm. And why? Because these military regimes, they tell the West, hey, we are quote-unquote secular. If we go, you will have these people to deal with. So it's kind of like either me or chaos, either me or ISIS. What do you choose? So, of course, all of the Western administration say, all right, you know what? He's a son of SOB, but he's our SOB. It's better. And it is in their benefit to keep that duality. So they do not support education, they don't support awareness, they don't support openness. It is their own best interest to have people stuck between the duality, the bully with the gun or the bully with the Sharia.
So we see, Bassem, we see people over here. I mean, we're marching in the streets, and both sides are marching in the streets now, and they're you know, I'm so oppressed, and blah, 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 blah. And then you see people like you, where people in America don't have any concept of going on television or going online and telling a joke about a president or a leader and then being arrested for that or being disappeared.
Yes. And this is a blessing. I mean, I know that you guys are always kind of concerned about how, like, the state of democracy. And I think this is a good thing. I mean, you know, when I was get asked, it's like, Bassem, do you think we are like a bunch of kids because we are complaining while you guys like went through a lot? I said, no, I think you should be complaining because it's like you guys are like someone who is used to a certain kind of service. He goes into a restaurant, he doesn't like his soup, it's cold, he turns it away. Nobody on the other table is like, oh, you should be grateful because other people in the world don't have food to eat. No, you have actually worked like for the past 400 years, civil war, revolution, at the beginning, civil rights, to get this kind of service. So when people think that this is not the kind of service they paid for through their history, they should be upset. And it's fine. So it doesn't have, like, you shouldn't be waiting until it actually goes down the drain, like, well, the Middle East.
So yeah. I agree with you, but here's where I'm probably a little more like you in some ways. I'm hated by every president of our country. I don't think I've been liked by a president since Ronald Reagan, and I mean that literally.
Good for you.
But the last two presidents have made it personal. The last two presidents have, and it's getting worse. are making this very, very personal, and we're starting to creep to a place to where, you know, the president just this last weekend said, you know, you should be fired from your job. They should, you know, they run you out of business, whatever, for freedom of speech. And the Americans are losing the understanding on both sides of the aisle that the only speech that needs protecting is the speech that the majority or those in power don't like. And so we have to, how can you teach Americans that you got to tolerate the stuff you really despise?
Well, actually, I don't think that you need to teach Americans. You have a president to teach, not the Americans. Because the thing is, this is, as an outsider, a complete outsider, that is my biggest problem with the current president. It's not because he's biased against people like me, who has a skin like me, has an accent like me, or come from a place like me, because that's kind of like a genetic. My biggest issue with him, that he doesn't understand the concept of becoming a public servant. He is still acting as a celebrity, rich guy who doesn't accept criticism. And you know what really bugged me? Not all, like, there's a lot of stuff that bugged me about him. But, like, this year, when he said, you know what, I'm not going to the correspondent dinner. I'm not going to that tradition where every president in the United States since, like, the only one who bailed out was Reagan because he was shot, you know? So he said, like, I'm not going so that you can make fun of me. And this is a tradition that, you don't understand, outside the world, outside America, how the world look at the correspondent dinner. And it's like, wow, they have a president. He is there, and he is being roasted for a whole night. This is amazing. And he said, no, I'm not going because I'm above this. And this is his problem. He doesn't understand that it is okay because people voted for him. People are paying his salary because of their tax paying.
So you say this kind of, not about Trump, you say this in your own, in the documentary about your experience. You talk a little bit about how, you know, these guys, we have to be able to make fun of our leader. But that's
absolutely
totally foreign to you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the thing is, in the Middle East, it's totally different. It's not like a rich guy who doesn't understand the concept of being a public servant. It is people who have been living with, it's like a whole region that has lived for so long into a patriarch system. It's like he's a father, he's the leader, he's the inspirational guru. It is something that you cannot touch. And it starts from a very young age. You can't talk back against your parents. You can't talk back against your teacher, against your boss, against all the way up to the president. And this has been ingrained in us. So when I went out and I made fun of it, it's like, oh, that's not appropriate. It's like, all right, so that's not appropriate, but like torturing people, jailing people is appropriate. It's really weird what people would consider is appropriate. It's like, I've been like hearing you, like, you know, before I went in, and you were saying like Puerto Rico is suffering, and people are talking about like whether we should kneel or not for the flag. It's crazy. It's crazy. People are offended by like kneeling for the flag, but they're not offended by what's happening to fellow Americans on this island.
Bassem Youssef is joining us. We'll continue our conversation. The movie is Tickling Giants, and you really need to see it. It's available everywhere. It is really an amazing documentary on the Arab Spring and what was going on with satire and what it takes to tell a joke in the Middle East. The average property loss from one home break-in is $2,316. Think about that. $2,316 total loss to America is in the billions. And that's why you and your family need Simply Safe Home Security. They will protect every door, every window in your home. You're going to get motion sensors, entry sensors. Simply Safe is completely wireless. There's no holes in the wall. And for $15 a month, they'll do all the monitoring. They'll call the police, the ambulance, you know, fire, whatever it is. Professional monitoring for $15 a month, and you own the system. Protect your home now. The way to do it is really simple. It is Simply Safe. Go to simplysafebeck.com. You get a 10% discount if you want to order today on the website. If you need the security system for some reason, I think I'm going to be robbed tonight. You can go to Best Buy, and you can have it all set up in your home by tonight. If you want to save 10%, go to simplysafebeck.com. Go there now. Simplysafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
We have Dr. Bassam Youssef on, and we're going to run out of time with him, and I could spend 2 hours with him. But first of all, let me just say this. Bassam, we have a Muslim Egyptian on our own staff who is a huge fan. His family lives in Egypt, and they are huge fans. And I'm going to get spanked by everybody in the family if I don't say thank you for them for what you've done in Egypt.
Oh my God, that's amazing! Thank you so much.
So let me ask you two quick questions. We have very little time left. You've seen now this whole revolution. You've watched it. Are you optimistic for Egypt and the Middle East?
On the long run, yes, because it had to be done because in the age of social media and Snapchat and Instagram and instant likes and shares, I think we got used to things have to happen instantly. So we were fooled by, oh my God, we had a revolution in 18 days. Yeah, we got Mubarak down.
Yeah,
and
right.
Then, oh my God, it's going down the drain. But if you look at history, history doesn't work this way. Look at America. 100 years in, you had a civil war. And even your revolution just didn't snap 1976. And then you had a constitution. You had a Bill of Rights. There was like fights and militias, fight wars in the streets. And people like it. And it took them like another 100 years for civil rights. It doesn't work this way. Look to Europe. It's kind of like, I hate to say this, but I think there's a blood tax that humanity have to pay to learn. And we've seen that in Europe, we've seen that in America, we've seen that in Latin America.
I think so, too.
And I think we will have to pay it. We have to pay to learn. We didn't pay our tax yet. And here's the one optimistic thing that's going out of the revolution, because I know that you're looking in the Middle East now and it looks terrible. But there has been, if you look closely, questioning was not a popular thing.
We have 45 seconds.
Yeah, so people are very popular. People now are questioning everything, questioning things about religion, questioning about military. And this is what came out of the revolution, the questioning. And that's a prequel of a revolution.
Bassam, I'd love to talk to you again. And I wish you all the best of luck. I truly believe you are one of the bravest people on television anywhere in the world, as you have real active threats from the power structure, no matter who's in power. And it's an honor to speak to you. Thank you so much, sir.
It's an honor to speak to you, sir. Thank you.
You bet. Name of the video that you must see is Tickling Giants.
And the book, Revolution for Dummies, Laughing Through the Arab Spring.
Have you seen the documentary?
I've only seen parts of it.
It is this guy. I mean, when they're writing comedy and he's like, so-and-so had their father arrested last night because of this show. Are we doing the right thing? It's remarkable.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, there's a ton of things that I know that the good doctor from Egypt and I will disagree on, but I really can't urge you enough to even share this documentary with your older kids. I mean, it has some dicey language in it, as it's a group of comedy writers who have never written comedy before in their life. This is a remarkable story. You don't realize what it's like in the rest of the world. And here's a guy who was a heart surgeon, and a good one. And he decides he's in Tahrir Square, and he sees that he's, you know, seeing on TV a bunch of lies, and it's state-run TV. So he goes on the internet. And the internet opens up, you know, the people say, there's finally a guy on the internet who's saying what the people are saying and saying without any fear, and it takes off on the internet. He then gets a television show of his own within, I think, a year, because he sweeps the nation. And Mubarak is swept out, and he is excited, and he thinks, okay, you know, Morsi's going to be the guy. And then as that goes on, he realizes, oh my gosh, Morsi is not, this is another dictatorship. Then he's got to go. And he reflects the people, and Morsi actually come, and it's an intense scene where they are filming him at his house. And he's watching the news where they are saying, we're going to have to arrest him. And Morsi has just issued an arrest. He has blasphemed Islam. Now imagine this. You're living in Egypt. You have mocked the Egyptian people and government, and you've blasphemed Islam. He's dead. He sends his family away and says, you got to get away from me. And then he's sitting there in his home by himself, and he's just watching the news, and he realizes, I've just got to go turn myself in. And he turns himself in with all of the clerics and everything on television, on state-run television, saying, you know, do you have the right to shoot him? You know, not yet. Not yet. He turns himself in. Luckily for him, the Supreme Court lets him go, and he returns. Morsi is then toppled. Al-Sisi comes in, and Al-Sisi is using his power to also crack down. There's a chilling thing. I happen to like Al-Sisi myself. I've seen what he's been doing in many other areas. This is the first time I've seen what he's been doing with the media, which I didn't like. He's talking about, hey, you know, it takes time before I can get control of the media and tell them what to say and what not to say. But that's the culture over there. And we as Americans need to understand, yeah, we got some problems. We do have problems, but we don't have problems like this. And we can't silence dissent. We cannot create this.
Yeah, he's being gracious, too, when he says, and if you haven't seen, the documentary is called Tickling Giants, where we just talked to the guy it was about in Egypt. They call him the John Stewart of Egypt, basically not. Meaning he's a comedian in Egypt. But, I mean, taking stands in such a different way. I mean, I was watching this show, a clip of it last night, the new show on Comedy Central, and they're launching it. Basically, it's the Colbert Report.
Yes.
But they're trying to do like an Alex Jones thing with it. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to see, like, is this going to be any good? You know, you want to, mm-hmm. you know. So I watch a little bit of it. And he starts it with this monologue about how he's mocking the right, mm-hmm. which he includes Alex Jones in for God only knows what reason. But he's mocking the right. And he's saying things like, oh, well, you know, one thing we never want to do here is listen to anyone else's viewpoint. All we want is our views to be confirmed all the time. That's how you know something's true. And the crowd's going crazy. Do you not see that you are illustrating your own point with your audience?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what world is this? Mm-hmm. You're sitting here saying, while your crowd is cheering at their views being confirmed, you're criticizing the other side for wanting their views to be confirmed. That's why this weird, tough battle, right, in the media, where someone like him, the guy might go to prison for making a freaking joke. I mean, he might have one of his writers get shot in the streets if they criticize the wrong person.
There's a scene in there where somebody is shot, I think, in their stairwell, and it's just bloody, and they goes to the comedy writing, and they're like, we don't know how to write. We have to write a show. We don't know. People are dying all around us, and people are being shot in the streets, and we don't know what to do. And he gives this pretty stirring speech to his staff and gets into an argument with his staff at one point. And he's like, look, actions. This isn't about words. We have to be about action. This is not going to be solved by another demonstration in the street. It's not going to be solved by another boycott. It's not going to be solved by any of that. It's we have to have principles and then live those in our actions. That's not heard.
I mean, we have to be a place, all of us, we have to be a place to where we can question our own side, question the other side, and be comfortable with somebody who is disagreeing with us. As I said yesterday, there is a real problem in our country with safe spaces. In Egypt, your words make you unsafe. In Egypt, by saying something, the government can come arrest you and kill you. Your words make you unsafe. In America, your words don't make you unsafe. Don't talk to me about a safe zone. You're not unsafe. You're uncomfortable. And there is a very big difference between being uncomfortable and being unsafe. Life is not comfortable. It's not. No, nothing good has ever come from being comfortable your whole life. Why did Jesus say, well, you know, rich man's never going to be able to make it into heaven? Why? Because he's too comfortable. He's not willing to let go of all of the comforts that he has surrounded himself with. You're supposed to be uncomfortable, especially in college. You're supposed to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, Matt Walsh has written about this many times on theblaze.com in that religion should make you uncomfortable. It should make you feel like people are looking at you because you're the one standing out, because you're supposed to be standing out. Your actions are supposed to make you feel weird.
Yes, and even in church should not be a comfortable place for you.
It should not be that audience on Comedy Central confirming your viewpoints, confirming all the choices you've made in your life.
You know what it is? Too many Christians... And this happens across the board, but let me just use Christians. Too many Christians look at our churches as a hospital, which I think it should be. A church is a hospital. That's what it is. I have been out on the battlefield for the last week. 6 days I've been taking shots, spiritual shots, and I am spent. I got nothing left. You go to the spiritual hospital and they bind your wounds, they get you back up, they give you some medicine and say, get back out there. Okay? That's what it is. Unfortunately, too many churches and too many Christians look at that hospital as, well, the Sunday meeting is when all the doctors meet. Man, when we all get together for that hour or so, that's all the doctors coming in and saying, how we're going to help everybody else. How we're going to cure them. No. I'm sorry, then if that's the way it is, then I'm in the wrong church. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a doctor. I'm a patient. I'm struggling. I need help. I need healing. I need answers. I need medicine. I need forgiveness, and I need to know how to forgive others, and I need to know how to forgive myself. I'm a patient, not a doctor. We just want to be in our own little group and cheer and point at the other group. It's why I don't do Bill Maher. I have respect for Bill Maher. I've defended Bill Maher for years. I also disagree with him entirely.
only about 93.7% of the time.
90, but probably literally 95% of the time, I completely disagree with him. However, sometimes he's right. And I defend his right to be right, and I defend his right to be wrong. He's asked me to come on the show several times. I won't go on his show because he has an audience that is screaming for red meat. They cheer. We are not in the Roman Colosseum. And it's what we've created with Facebook and Twitter and everything else. We've created a system to where I'm only saying it so I can hear your cheers through likes.
Coming up, we want to tell you about the tax plan. The Washington Post has acquired it. It's a 9-page outline on what the tax pitch is going to be.
Not gonna go well.
Give you the details in a moment.
Our world is a place of uncertainty and stress. From the tension and the possible military action in North Korea. What happened with Kurdistan? They took a vote
today in Iraq to the Kurds did to break away and establish their own state. This is going to put the Middle East in great peril, I think. Turkey is already mobilizing their armies. So is Iran. So is Iraq. Then we have everything going on from the hurricanes is still going on in Houston and Florida, and what is happening in Puerto Rico. And the impact on all of these things on your money, your family's livelihood, what you have in a 401k, what you have in your pension fund. If you have a pension, that chicken is coming home to roost, man. So how do you protect your investments? I want to have you read an exclusive report from President Reagan's budget director, David Stockman. And in it, he says, here are the threats that are real and are coming and could really wipe the economy to a new level that we haven't seen probably in the last, 80, 90 years. No savvy investor can afford to ignore the warnings. May I suggest we need to have some things that we can restart, our society with. And when it comes down to a push comes to shove, gold is where the country and the world has always reset in the end. Call 866-465-3546. That's 866-465-3546. 1-866-GOLDLINE. Ask about their pricing protection program that nobody else will do. Read their important risk information and find out if buying gold or silver is right for you. 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
There is something really very, very disturbing that I saw yesterday. In fact, I had a couple of senators write to me and say, Glenn, is this true? And yes, it is. A military guy from West Point tweeted some pictures of him about the communists will win. And he's a member of the Democratic Socialist of America. And it's just really, it's frightening. It's really frightening. The military is aware of it, and we'll bring you up to speed. But it's something you should be aware of, unfortunately. Let's talk about the health care bill is now out. As of Friday, it's over, and we're going to be paying a lot higher medical care premiums next week. Judge Moore won in Alabama last night. That they are saying that that's another defeat for Donald Trump. I'm not sure if that's really what that says. But now he's going on to taxes. The Washington Post just got a 9-page outline of what the new tax plan is. And it's going to be a tough one. It's going to be a tough one.
Well, there's a lot of good things in here. It is typically going to drop taxes for a lot of people. It would lower the tax rates for the upper range from 39.6, which it currently is, to 35. It's not a big cut, but it is a little bit less. One of the things you're going to see from Democrats is that it actually raises the rate on the lowest tax bracket from 10% to 12%.
Why would you do that?
Well, it's not true. I mean, it is the rate does change. However, the standard deduction gets bigger. So essentially what they're doing is they're expanding a 0% tax bracket to many more people. So you will pay no taxes on your first $24,000 at all if you're married, $12,000 if you're not. So, but the rate, they will have a talking point
to
a lot of people that are not paying attention with the rate going higher from 10 to 12.
Yes.
Now, I will say all the individual brackets are higher than what Trump ran on in the campaign. That is it's something to know. His rates were lower then. There's some other tax benefits for individuals. The biggest changes really come for corporate rates. They will lower the sole proprietorship and S-Corp, those rates. A lot of people file as individuals. If you do that and you have a small business, it's going to go from 39.6 to 25 if they get this through. There's a big drop. Also, a big drop in the corporate rate. Again, not as low as what Trump was talking about. He wanted to get it to 15 or even 10. They're going to go for 20%. However, that is lower than the average in the industrialized world. It would go from 35 to 20.
Why wouldn't you be dramatic?
I don't know.
Why wouldn't you just go for something really dramatic and then end here? Why do the Republicans start at some place that the Democrats could end at?
Yeah,
I mean, it's just crazy.
I will say that this era, there's a lot of bold talk going on in this era. There's not a lot of bold policy.
Yeah.
It's,
who was it that said, was it David French who said, ideologically, when it comes down to it, the Democrats and the Republicans are really close, and yet our rhetoric is dividing us like crazy. But we're arguing over what? You're going to take the top tax rate from 39 to 35?
Wow, dramatic.
Wow, okay. Well, let's argue and fight about that. I mean, it's nuts. It's really nuts.
Glenn Beck.
So another way to get a tax cut is to effectively just spend a little bit less. Let me give you a couple ways. When you book your business travel, especially if you own a small business, you want to spend less because that can be your money, right? So you go to Upside.com, and Upside has a fantastic way of doing this. Upside has a situation where they're going to save you money on the price when you book your travel. Then they're also going to give you a gift card to like Amazon.com every single time you buy a business trip. And then they're going to treat you like a celebrity. Six-star treatment you'll get from Upside's customer service specialists, who they call navigators. And this is great. They'll even call you. They'll be like, hey, there's a seat open, and I know you're in a middle one. Why don't we move you over there? You want to do that? It's great. And you got to try this. It's six-star treatment from Upside.com. Use the code Beck, and you get a minimum $100 gift card to Amazon.com. It's code Beck for a minimum $100 gift card to Amazon. Minimum purchase required. See site for complete details.
Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Your day of reckoning is coming. That was the warning from Steve Bannon to the Republican establishment. Your day of reckoning is coming. Clearly, he was confident that his candidate for the Alabama special election, Roy Moore, would win. And Jeff Sessions, former, Senate seat against Luther Strange, endorsed by Donald Trump, was going to lose. Bannon was right. The day of reckoning is here. Is it, though? Is this something that is going against the president? What was this really all about? Moore's victory is an undeniable upset to the Trump administration and to the Republican establishment. But it seems odd to me that Bannon, Trump's former White House chief strategist, was stumping for Moore against the president. Now, maybe it's just me. I am old enough to remember when the slightest disagreement against anything that Donald Trump said would have been met with vicious reprisals, mainly from Steve Bannon, who here, how times have changed, not only disagreeing, but campaigning against Donald Trump. In 2017, every principle has an expiration date, and that is the point. Bannon wants everyone to know that his attack on Trump is an attack on the Republican establishment, which I guess it is. After all, who is more establishment than the president of the United States, Steve? This is an eighth grade romance gone wrong. According to Bannon, draining the swamp is the reason why he did not support Luther Strange. Throwing his support behind Moore was actually meant to help Trump, he says, not hurt him.
We did not come here to defy Donald Trump. We came here to praise and honor him.
Praise and honor him. Wow. Again, call me old-fashioned, but if somebody would have said that about Barack Obama, my head would have popped. Praise and honor generally is left in my book for God. But these are strange times indeed. Last night, Donald Trump found out that his day of reckoning was indeed here, but he needs to understand it is courtesy of Steve Bannon.
It's Wednesday, September 27th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, 4 years ago, on the 40th anniversary of D-Day, I read a letter from a young woman writing to her late father, who had fought on Omaha Beach. Her name was Lisa Zanatta Henn, and she said, "We will always remember. We will never forget what the boys of Normandy did." Well, let's help her keep her word. If we forget what we did, we won't know who we are. I'm warning of an eradication of that, of the American memory that could result ultimately in an erosion of the American spirit. Let's start with some basics. More attention to American history and a greater emphasis on civic ritual. And let me offer lesson number one about America. All great change in America begins at the dinner table. So tomorrow night in the kitchen, I hope the talking begins. And children, if your parents haven't been teaching you what it means to be an American, let them know and nail them on it. That would be a very American thing to do.
That was the farewell address of Ronald Reagan. Usually that is the time when a president says, this is what I'm really concerned about in the future. And his concern was a loss of who we are as Americans because no one was teaching the history of America, which we now know is absolutely true. And he also talked about the erosion of civic rituals, which is really the one part of this NFL thing that is bothering me, is it is a civic ritual that we are going to lose. That makes a huge difference in a society. Kyle Olson, he is the founder and CEO of EAGnews.org. He follows everything education and is the co-author of the book Control when we took on Common Core. And welcome, Kyle. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So you're in town, and we wanted you to stop by to talk specifically about what's happening. We're seeing all kinds of stories come out now that Americans, high school, college, and even beyond, don't understand the First Amendment. They don't understand any of the Bill of Rights, and they don't understand socialism, Marxism, communism, capitalism, none of it, and they don't seem to care.
I think a lot of it has to do with the generation has not had to sacrifice. You've had the greatest generation. I mean, you've had teenagers who stormed the beaches of Normandy, and you had those very same people had to sacrifice during the Great Depression. And here we live in a time where students, they haven't had to sacrifice. There's instant gratification. There's texting with friends. There's all of those sorts of things. And then at the same time, we have schools that believe in multiculturalism. They believe that American history is evil. Our founders are evil. They're racist. They're slave owners. They're sexist. They're all of those things. And so when you put all of that together, that's how you get to where we are today.
So how do we wake people up to this? Let me show this to you. If in the control room, if you just go to the glennbeck.com page, pull up the story about the communist cadet. Have you seen this?
No,
yet?
I haven't.
This is something we posted last night. He's a guy who tweeted. His handle is Commie Bebop, and he has the red rose of, you know,
nice.
Democratic Socialist. And he is a West Point cadet, and here's the picture of him. And you will see two pictures of him. First one is him underneath his cadet uniform. Graduating from West Point is a Che shirt. Mm-hmm. Below that, the other one is him standing here with his uniform and his hat. And inside his hat, he wrote, "Communism will win."
And what do you think will happen to him?
He'll be celebrated, most likely. Mm-hmm.
There's no accountability. And you see what's happening with the NFL. And you think, where is the respect? Where is our connection to our roots and what people did to sacrifice to get us to where we are today.
I wrote something. Let me just highlight a couple of things I wrote about this last night, because I saw this last night and a couple of senators wrote to me and said, is this right? And I said, yeah, unfortunately, it is. And so what I wrote was, what politicians signed their name for this, cadet, because you have to have politicians sign your name. The only thing that killed more people over the last 100 years than communism is disease. 100 million dead and the deadliest government system in all of human history. This ignorant, foolish, and reckless boy. How can Americans be so obscene and so stupid? What would the press say and the left and the media say if in his hat it said fascism will win and his T-shirt had Hitler? We would all be outraged. We should be just as outraged on this. But we've raised a generation that doesn't even understand what communism is.
That's right.
It's a killer.
And we talk a lot about the Holocaust, which is important, and we need to talk about that more. But look at what Russia did to its own people and the tens of millions of people that died under Stalin and all of the others.
Jews. I mean, the programs of the Jews. I mean, he did it too, and yet it's okay that somehow or another we forget this about Stalin.
Yeah, I mean, this is from the New York Times. For all its flaws, the communist revolution taught Chinese women to dream big.
That's the New York Times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the way it happens. And I think it's such it's so embedded now. You're working on something to kind of get to this a little bit earlier, try to get kids earlier so they understand the basics about history and
what. So what are you doing?
Right. So I've been working at EAG for 10 years now, mm-hmm. and we have focused a lot. We've been outraged at the problems. And so about 2 years ago, I started thinking about, well, why don't we be part of the solution? And why don't we provide a different type of current events curriculum that parents and teachers will want to use? So next month, we're launching Lumen Student News, which is going to compete with CNN and Channel One and provide classic American values. We'll provide Judeo-Christian values. We'll put an emphasis on American history. I'm leaving here, and I'm going to Wall Builders, where we're filming segments with David. Mm. And
you're never going to get that into a school.
There is a huge appetite for it.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Because people embrace America. It's not universal, of course. You know, it's not going to be in San Francisco, but it will be in many places that are culturally conservative. I mean, there was a story we had yesterday in Alabama. There was a school district that was threatened. They would pray at the football games. And there was a atheist, anti-Christian group that was threatening them with a lawsuit. And so the school district caved and said, okay, we won't say the prayer anymore. Mm. And so the parents in the stands started reciting the Lord's Prayer. There is an appetite for that sort of material. And so if people go to lumennews.com.
Spell it.
LUMEN news.com. You can sign up. We have a promo code, Glenn. You can get 20% off.
Wow. Uh-huh.
And you can sign up, and it'll be 10 minutes a day. And we're going to get into all sorts of topics. I mean, for example, it's going to be 10 minutes a day. And in our second week, we're planning to have a special where we are getting into free speech and the roots of free speech, why the First Amendment was created in the first place. I never learned that in high school or middle school. And so it's a great service that parents can sign up for, schools can sign up for, and learn about the real history of America.
We are on the same exact page, and I need to figure out how I can help, you know, hold your arms up a little bit more.
We would love that.
We are on exactly the same page. You know, I started this week with playing Springtime for Hitler in Germany, you know, from the producers. And I played it on the air today, on Monday, because I said I was watching that with my son, and 13 years old, in my house. And we got to the part where they're singing that song and they're doing, you know, the dance number that's making the swastika, you know. And he looks at me and said, when was this made, Dad? And I said, I don't know, 2006 or so. He said, and the government allowed it in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And the government allowed it. I thought he regretted saying it because I stopped the movie and I'm like, what do you mean by that? Even in, I mean, this is why, you know, people say, we got to reach out and go, no, we really don't. We have problems in our own home. The culture is so far the other way that even if you think you are providing a great education and you are really, they're not getting it.
No.
Because it's only coming really from you.
Right. And I think you were absolutely right when you said it's embedded. I mean, it is embedded in the K-12 system, in the university system. You know, one of the things we're going to be focusing on is one of the segments, weekly segments, is going to be called Work Matters. And we're going to focus on careers, trades,
for you.
Skilled trades that require...
Have you talked to Mike Rowe about that?
We're trying to.
Okay. All right. I can set you up with
okay,
that.
Okay. That'd be great. Okay. Appreciate that. And so we want kids to think about careers that don't require a four-year degree that puts them in huge debt and a degree that is not applicable.
Degrees that, it was amazing. I met with some people from Rwanda and they had come over here on scholarship to be able to put their country back together. And all these women were there and it was, you know, I'm getting my ag degree, I'm getting infrastructure degree, I'm getting a degree in, you know, a business, whatever it is, banking. And one of them said, I'm getting my degree in women's studies and the Holocaust. And I'm thinking to myself, well, what are you going to do with that? She wasn't going back home. The rest of them were going back home. And it was fascinating to me that each of them were talking about getting a degree that no one in America, I was surprised that Harvard was even offering an agricultural degree. They just you don't even think about those things, but they went in because they needed the education to do something. Most kids are going to college and they're taking a degree. And I think it's, what is it? 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10 will never use that degree. They have no use for it.
And we've gone through a decade where when President Obama was president, I mean, it was just the mantra that you graduate from high school, you go to college, you have to have a 4-year degree. And it's obvious why the education system does that, because it perpetuates the whole system. It perpetuates the salaries and the administration and just the whole system. But we've got to break that down. And there's great programs like Praxis, for example, that acts like it's an apprenticeship. And there's tons of programs that are available to kids and parents now, and they just need to connect with them.
Quickly, I know you're obviously an expert in this. You've been working in education for a long time. What percentage of a curriculum do you think should be based on Mel Brooks' remake starring Matthew Broderick? Is there a specific?
Probably 98%.
98%.
Thank you. Okay. And that's coming from the expert.
Kyle Olson, EAGnews.org. Also, you may know him as the co-author of a little book called Conform, Exposing the Truth About Common Core in the Public Education. Co-written with some guy named Glenn Beck.
No idea.
And EAG News is the place to go to find him and everything he's working on.
Give me the
really
address
important.
Again for Lumen.
Lumen, L-U-M-E-N, news.com.
It's great. Thank you so much, Kyle.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Putting aside all of the craziness that is now engulfing our world, you should strive to become more self-reliant. You don't know when the world is going to spin on a dime. 2 months ago, nobody in Puerto Rico had any idea what their life was going to be like now. Best time to prepare is before an emergency, when time is on your side. I want you to act today and secure your family's future. Be prepared. Trust My Patriot Supply with your food storage. My food storage growing up was prepared by my grandmother, my aunt, and my mom. And we, you know, we would cut the beans and we would go pick the beans and the peas and everything else. But they did the food storage. And that was a tradition that my grandparents had because we were never a wealthy family and they lived through the Great Depression. And we stored our own food.
A lot of people don't can anymore and they don't have a garden. Now, My Patriot Supply is the way for your family to keep that tradition alive. Right now, they have their 102-serving survival food kit. This is brand new, healthy food that lasts up to 25 years and less than a dollar per serving. You'll get breakfast, lunch, and dinner shipped to your home for free. Easy to store. Less than a dollar per serving. Begin to be prepared now at 800-271-63. It's 800-271-63. A prepared America is a strong America, and that's My Patriot Supply's mission. PrepareWithGlenn.com, 800-271-63.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So I got an email in from a Blaze subscriber. Said, Glenn, I'm 30 years old. I'm an avid listener to your radio program, subscriber to the Blaze. Till a couple of years ago, I considered myself an atheist. And after listening to you for just the last 2 years, not only have I taken off the Republican team jersey and defined what my principles are, but I've also sought after consistency in my personal life, and I'm now a God guy. In February, my wife gave birth to our first child, Emma Margaret. I was blessed and broken enough to actually get baptized with my daughter. How great is this? He said, I want you to know, I tell you this because I know at times you wonder, you know, who's listening? What am I doing? And I want to tell you that in my life, my family, your impact has been tremendous and life-changing. But I have a question for you. At the time, I didn't think much of it as my daughter wasn't yet born and I hadn't been reborn. But the message consistently has been ringing in my head since you said it. Listening to you discuss the horrors of the educational system at large, my wife and I now believe that when the time comes, I have to send our daughter to a Christ-based classical learning school in Richmond. How do we do it? And he's got several questions. I'm going to try to answer this. We're going to do something on Facebook about 20 minutes after this program, so about 12:15, 12:20 Eastern time today, and I'm going to try to answer that question for you. So if you are trying to figure out what to do with school and how to find the right school and how to raise the kids, we'll try to help you with that coming up.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Man, there is so much to address today and so little time. Usually we have so little to say and so much time, but it's the exact opposite this time. And Pat Gray joins us with a little more on how out of hand things are getting still with the NFL.
It's ridiculous. It's crazy. Instead of talking about, you know, things like the GOP tax document, which they've come out with, and if this is the best we can do.
Can I ask you something? I said to Stu earlier. Who negotiates starting at a place the Democrats would end at?
I don't know. We've got the great negotiator in office.
I mean,
it's crazy.
If they take this as is, it's an okay deal.
Barely okay.
Right.
Barely
okay.
And because we have majorities in both houses and the presidency, it's not okay.
You start with I'm going to abolish the IRS.
Right.
That's where you start.
Right.
And then by the time you get to it's going to be a flat tax of 20%, everybody's like, "Whoo, okay. All right. That's reasonable."
Exactly.
Instead, we're saying we're going to reduce it from 39 to 35.
You can't do it.
That's where you end, not where you start.
Yeah. So instead, we've gotten so carried away with this NFL kneeling thing. The Pocatello Philharmonic last night knelt before their performance.
Did they really?
Yes, they did. They took a knee.
I didn't know they had a Philharmonic.
It was, I think they were performing Bach's Second Overture in C-sharp. And they never got to it because they knelt the whole time.
Wow.
The tuba player couldn't hold his tuba.
Wow.
So it's crazy.
That's amazing.
Also, what I love now is the fallout from the Democrats over Trump saying that the NFL players should be forced into standing during the anthem.
Mm-hmm.
And then Attorney General Jeff Sessions said that there should be some standing rule in the NFL that requires them to stand. Well, it's a private business. If they want to do that, they could.
If Jeff Sessions wants that, then there should be a rule in every bakery that if you disagree with gay marriage, you still have to bake the cake. It's a private company and a private individual.
Yeah.
If the individual decides that they don't want to stand for it, they don't have
to stand.
And if the private team owner or the NFL decides, I want to fire that guy.
He can. Right. That's how it works. But the Democrats are going crazy over this. And the hypocrisy is just, they're saying that Trump doesn't respect democracy. He's becoming a dictator. Here's tyranny is showing. But they're fine. When the government forced all Americans to purchase a product they don't necessarily want. And if you don't, you're not in good standing with the law. That's fine. That unconstitutional move is fine with them. But you can't suggest that the players stand for the national anthem. It's...
Pat Gray Unleashed coming up here on the Blaze Radio Network. I noticed with the bakery thing as well, an actual bakery made cupcakes and they spelled out like hashtag take a knee.
Yes.
And it's like,
did you see that?
If you went into that bakery and said, you know what, I want supportive of Donald Trump cupcakes, you know, whatever it was, fire those sons of bitches.
There's a lot of cupcakes. It's more my order.
It really is a big order.
Yeah.
But also, would they be forced to make it? And I think the answer to that would be
absolutely no. They would say no, and they would do it. Right. No.
But
right.
I guess this is the world we live in.
Speaking of which, did you see the Sheila Jackson Lee take a knee in Congress?
Mm.
She took a knee. Yeah.
We do have Sheila Jackson Lee audio.
Can we play the Sheila Jackson Lee audio? I've got other things I want to get
She's so bad.
I mean, just hold on to your...
That these individuals have a right to express themselves. But I do not join with a president that would say, wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bee off the field.
Stop for just a second. First of all, do you really think she says son of a bee in private life? Do you really think she says son of a bee?
I don't think so. No chance.
Also, was she there talking about the cupcakes and the wedding cakes? Is she there?
No.
Saying that. So
no.
She's not consistent.
No.
And she never says son of a bee. But go ahead.
NFL, do you know what you're saying? You are talking about African American mothers. You are calling them.
Is that a weird point?
Son of a bee? You're calling those children's mothers. Single mothers sometimes. Mothers who have fought to overcome to get their children where they can be.
I mean, while technically you are referring to the mother as a female dog. Or whatever you want to say now. The insult is actually for the man. It's not directed at their mother.
When you say you are a son of a bitch,
I'm talking to you, not your mom.
Not your mom.
It's a way to make it so it feels like he's doing something worse.
Yes. You know what? It is quintessential. Everybody on her side, her own family, she should be able to say halfway through, I'm disgusted by me. That was just such a straw man, ridiculous, just to get you angry. I'm grabbing at anything I can. I'm disgusted by myself. That's what should have happened in that speech. It's sickening.
Well, a lot of the players do that too. Like, my mother? My mother was a queen. All right.
Oh, was she?
Was she literally a queen?
Which country was she the head
right.
of? I'm curious.
What peoples
so literal,
did she oppress?
Right. She's a queen, huh?
Was she an imperialist? Wow. Like the Queen of England?
It's okay.
So stupid.
One other story, and I want you to go to glennbeck.com, and I want you to see this. This is truly, in fact, let me just read what I wrote. This is a picture of a cadet at West Point. There's two of them. He tweeted these photos with just the hashtag Veterans for Kaepernick. And he is in his graduating whites. And he in one picture, he is opening up his jacket and it shows him with a Che shirt. And the other one giving the Black Power sign. And in his hat, he has taped a sign that says, communism will win. Now, think of that. Think of that. So, this is what I wrote. What politician signed his name for this cadet? Have to have a politician say you're okay to get in. What politician signed their name for this cadet? The only thing that killed more people over the last 100 years than communism is disease. 100 million dead, and the deadliest government system in all of human history. How can Americans be so obscene and so stupid? What would be said by the press and the left and the media if he, in his hat, had a sign that said fascism will win and his t-shirt had Hitler's face on it? Understandably, they would all be outraged, as would I.
Yet there's virtually no difference.
Right. There's no difference and there's no outrage. The New York Times just ran a story that said, for all of its flaws, the communist revolution taught Chinese women to dream big.
Oh,
gosh. Oh, my. Unbelievable.
For all of its flaws,
it's a couple.
They may have killed 100 million people themselves.
That's the Hitler and the Autobahn argument, isn't it?
Yeah.
For all of his flaws, he built the Autobahn. That's a nice stretch of road.
That V2 rocket was fast.
China murdered 6 times more people than Hitler. And for all of his flaws, yes, he did have the Volkswagen. Mm. Yeah, but these systems were and still are toxic killers. Che hated blacks, hated homosexuals, hated anyone who was different than him and didn't agree with him. He killed them literally for sport. What bothered me about this last night, and I want you to read this editorial, and I want you to see these pictures at glennbeck.com, and I want you to pass this on to your friends. The time for laughs on this stuff, long gone. Long gone. This is like having a picture of Jews going into a gas chamber as a joke. Che was a butcher. Communism is a disease. We have failed our children as adults. They don't know. We as adults younger in our life, we tolerated the funny Che shirts. And now this generation embraces these killers. Communists, fascists, populists, nationalists, socialists, Antifa, Nazis, Black Panthers, the leadership of BLM, white and black supremacists, ISIS, Hamas, all of them, and all those who laugh them off despite the piles of dead bodies left in their wake will be held accountable in the courts of humankind. I pray for this cadet, but I also pray for the men and women who have to serve by his side. May it never be one of somebody that we love, that when the chips are down, he looks at them and says, I have your back. Because history shows us communists never have your back.
Well, sometimes they have your back, but they usually have a gun pointed at it. So we can kind of clarify that. Pat, he starts in just about a few minutes here.
Moments from now. I'm tingly just to think of it.
You really are.
Tingly.
I can see the tingle. Your goosebumps are, yes.
It's like that walk to the Apollo spacecraft when they would walk across that ramp.
That's such a good description.
Right?
What a great analogy.
Just like that.
In super slow motion.
Yeah, the smoke is coming up, the steam.
We need to build that for you.
He's got the right stuff.
Or not. He's just sitting there talking. That's coming up in just a little while. If you're a gun owner, can you say with 100% confidence that your family and your home are safe? What happens after you pull that trigger? What happens if you pull the trigger too soon? You're going to have to live with the consequences of this. But beyond that, when the police arrive, what do you say? What state do you live in? That's going to make, what community do you live in? What town do you live in? Because it's going to make a huge difference when the police arrive. Here's a simple way to become a conceal and carry home defense protector. Somebody who has confidence in protecting themselves and their family. It is the 2017 Concealed Carry and Family Defense Guide from the U.S. Concealed Carry Association. And is 100% free. You're going to learn how to detect attackers before they see you. I'm sorry you have to learn this, but you do have to learn this in today's society. How do you survive a mass shooting? What is the safest place to be
What's the most dangerous place to be when you're out? How do you responsibly own and store a gun? What happens after you pull the trigger? 164 pages. It comes with a bonus audio version, so you can listen to it in your car, and it's absolutely free. And if you act right now, you get the bonus home defense checklist. I urge you, please, visit protectanddefend.com. Do it right now. 100% instant access right now. Protectanddefend.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
There's several things that we want to cover today. We're going to go over to Facebook for about 45 minutes. In about half an hour, I'm going to cover some things with education and a few other things that I want to address. Also, I really want to talk to you a little bit more about Puerto Rico. And in fact, Mary's been holding for a while. Hello, Mary. You're on the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, Mr. Beck. Pleasure to hear from you.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
No problem. The reason I was calling and I waited, doesn't matter at this point. The situation that Puerto Rico is confronting right now, it feels that to me that is a bit underestimated. Situation being is that on the airport right now, San Juan International Airport.
Yeah.
There are a lot of American citizens that are stranded there from mainland trying to get home. These people have been there without water, without food, for over 4 days. There was a call to the governor of Puerto Rico, Ricardo Rosselló, and let him know that there is a very bad situation at the airport. There are people currently dying at the airport because they can't get out and because the situation is that bad. There is no communication on the island. And what you see and what I've been following up on reports and the media on in Puerto Rico, all you can see is that the government is overwhelmed with the situation. Mayors of different towns are snapping on national TV because at this point they feel that their hands are tied. The situation is as bad as there are corpses from cemeteries. There are floating out. So now you have even a graver situation because the ground is saturated. So you have a mixture of coarse and diesel and gasoline and sewer water just floating all over the streets. People have lost everything. And even the people that got prepared and they bought the water and they bought the supplies, all the supplies are scattered and spread all over the mountains of Puerto Rico. There are communities in Puerto Rico that they still waiting 7 days in. They still waiting to be rescued. The dam of Oaxaca River, that dam, it's broken, and they just evacuated 70,000 people out of that dam, trying to get them to safety.
Stu, do we have any aircraft carriers off the coast? Why have we not sent aircraft carriers?
I know there are some that have been, they're working on sending, there's a particular medical vessel that they're sending there that's gigantic.
You need aircraft carrier. You need to be able to take thousands of people off of that island.
I know they're using the aircraft carriers apparently as like an airport because the airport is so damaged. They're having trouble landing in a lot of places. It's interesting because, you know, it is a real, real disaster there. The media is trying to make it about Donald Trump and his response.
It's not. It's about the people
there.
Yeah,
it's about the people. It really is.
Mary, thank you very much for your call. We'll try to do some more on this tomorrow because people really need to know what's going on. And the one thing that you can do is call your senator, call your representative, call the White House and tell them the Jones Act must be repealed. That stops ships from coming in from all over the world unless they pull into port in America first. It's got to be repealed.
Glenn Beck.